Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. Thanks for tuning in. Last week, we had lovely weather for Halloween trick-or-treating, but then we had a rather wet weekend, which made it difficult to get out and rake leaves, which is what I had planned to do. And that rainy trend will continue today. The high will be 48 with light rain. However, tomorrow, Election Day, looks to be a good day to get to your polling place to vote. It will be 43 and mainly sunny. That weather will continue through the week, although it will be getting colder. Highs on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday will only be around 30 degrees with part sun and part clouds. But then by the end of the week, they're calling for either snow flurries or maybe about an inch of snow. On the show today, we'll be talking with Cheryl Binson from Inclusive Ames, who will be telling us about an event they have coming up next Saturday. We'll also hear a report from KHOI reporter Joy Beadleston, who interviewed students at ISU who are part of an organization called Next Gen America. And City Council member Bronwyn Beatty Hansen will be with us in the last part of the show, and we'll be talking with her about the city's efforts to address climate change. But first, we have news from Dennis Hart.
Thanks very much, Gail. It's good to be here on this Monday. Given that Election Day is tomorrow, it's no surprise that politics made big news all around Iowa last week. The final Des Moines Register MediaCom Iowa poll released this past weekend shows the race for governor is close, very close. The poll shows that 46% of likely voters said they support Democratic challenger Fred Hubbell, 44% said they support Republican incumbent Kim Reynolds. That poll has a margin of error of plus or minus 3.5 points. In the governor's race last week, both Reynolds and Hubbell said they did not support President Trump's proposal to sign an executive order that would end birthright citizenship for Americans whose parents are undocumented immigrants. Meanwhile, the Iowa poll shows that incumbent 4th Congressional District Republican Congressman Steve King is in a tougher race than he's used to. 45% of likely Iowa voters statewide said they plan to support a Democrat for Congress. 39% said they would support a Republican. King was at the center of some controversy last week. He was condemned by a variety of Democrats and Republicans who accused him of hateful rhetoric and an extremist agenda. Criticism of King reached new heights following the massacre of 11 Jews at a synagogue in Pittsburgh and reports that King had met in August in Austria with members of a political organization founded by a former Nazi SS officer. King told about 60 people who attended a candidate forum in Des Moines on Thursday that reports linking him to a far-right Austrian political group are false, and he shouted down a protester who compared King's views to those of the suspected Pittsburgh synagogue shooter. King is facing Democrat J.D. Scholten in Tuesday's election. Scholten has raised twice as much campaign money as King has. While all this was going on, Iowa election officials said there is no evidence of widespread voter fraud and that voters can be assured their ballots are safe and secure and will be counted accurately. Also last week, hundreds of people gathered Monday night in Des Moines to mourn the 11 lives lost in the attack at that Pittsburgh synagogue. Local leaders of many faiths honored the victims. The executive director of the Interfaith Alliance of Iowa, Connie Ryan, told the crowd, in her words, "If we want to make sense of this world again, we must hold each other accountable against all hate, every time." Also last week, the Catholic Diocese of Sioux City acknowledged that it had concealed for decades a priest's admission that he sexually abused dozens of Iowa boys. The Reverend Jerome Coyle, who is now 85 years old, was stripped of his parish assignments in the 1980s, but he was never defrocked, and it was not until the Associated Press inquired about him last week that he was publicly identified by the church as an admitted pedophile, even though the Diocese of Sioux City had been aware of his conduct for 32 years. Meanwhile, word last week that a class-action lawsuit had been filed against a former Iowa youth basketball coach who admitted he secretly recorded nude videos of hundreds of boys. Greg Stephen, a founder and former head coach of the Iowa Barnstormers Youth Basketball Club, had pleaded guilty last month to 5 counts of sexual exploitation of a child, as well as transportation and possession of child pornography. Now a Des Moines lawyer has filed the class-action suit accusing Stephen of intrusion on his victim's seclusion. At the same time, the father of a Johnston teenager who authorities said was sexually assaulted and robbed by 4 of his classmates has sued the teens accused of attacking him and sued their parents. The father alleges the teens maliciously assaulted his son, who was 15 at the time, while the boy was unconscious. There was tragedy last Friday at Saydel High School in Des Moines when a student collapsed in a school hallway and stopped breathing. Max Drewell was rushed to a hospital where he died. Nearly 200 people gathered Friday night at Capital City Church for a candlelight vigil in his memory. Meanwhile, there was word that Drake University is going to enhance its public safety precautions in the wake of the third robbery near campus in the past month. In the latest one, two Drake students were robbed at gunpoint on the Greek walkway near 34th Street on Thursday night. The university announced it will increase the number of campus public safety officers on duty, expand the service hours for Drake's Safe Ride program, and continue to enhance lighting and security cameras on campus. Also last week, trial began in Mount Pleasant for a man charged with murder and child endangerment in the death of his infant son. 29-year-old Zachary Cohn is accused in the death of Sterling Cohn, who, authorities said, had been left in his baby swing for at least 9 days before his dad decided to call 911. The boy, who was not yet 4 months old, died last year of malnutrition, dehydration, and infection. He weighed just under 7 pounds when he died. In Marshalltown last week, Unity Point health officials announced the hospital will eliminate several staff positions and close its intensive care unit later this month to manage budget struggles. The closure of the ICU and the bistro on the south side of campus will affect 15 employees, but the hospital said they might be able to find work elsewhere in the Unity Point system. 10 non-patient care positions will also be eliminated. Meanwhile, medical marijuana advocates' quest for a stronger medication in Iowa was set back last Friday when the board overseeing Iowa's new program recommended sticking with a limit on how much THC medicinal products may contain. State law says the new medical marijuana products may contain no more than 3% of THC, which is the chemical that makes users high. On the education front, an Eastern Iowa school superintendent resigned last week after he said he had failed to adequately address issues regarding minority students. Davenport School Superintendent Art Tate also said he had become a liability in the district's dealings with the state. Among other things, the Davenport district is under state supervision because a disproportionate number of minority students were identified for special education and subject to disciplinary actions. Meanwhile, a teacher in the Davenport School District said she regrets wearing blackface for a Halloween costume and said she did not know it was offensive. Megan Luloff wore the makeup for her costume when she attended a party last month that was not connected to her job. Her lawyer said Luloff had never heard the term blackface and did not know its history or, in the lawyer's words, how hurtful it is to African Americans. The Davenport District is investigating Luloff. Meanwhile, there was word that more than 200 books had been donated to the Northwest Iowa Library, where a man had checked out and then burned several LGBTQ children's books weeks ago. And several GoFundMe pages and Facebook fundraisers have raised thousands of dollars for the Orange City Public Library. All this after Paul Doerr, the director of a religious group called Rescue the Perishing, released a video in which he denounced the library for having the LGBTQ books and threw them into a burning barrel. Also last week, federal investigators said a broken rail caused the fiery train derailment in northwest Iowa last year, a derailment that released more than 330,000 gallons of ethanol. The National Transportation and Safety Board said that Union Pacific's maintenance was not adequate before the derailment and that inspectors did not do enough to identify flaws in the track. 5 of the 20 derailed tankers plunged into Jack Creek, 160 miles northwest of Des Moines. No injuries were reported in connection with that derailment. And last week, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources was investigating a spill of about 1,000 gallons of lime slurry into central Iowa's Four Mile Creek. The spill took place when a storage tank overflowed at the air gas plant in Ankeny. Afterward, there were no signs of dead or distressed fish. There was a report last week that Iowa ranked as one of the top gas-guzzling states in the nation. Only 3 other states, North and South Dakota and Wyoming, ranked worse than Iowa in overall vehicle energy efficiency, according to WalletHub, which is a personal finance website. 3 out of every 4 new vehicles registered in Iowa this year have been pickup trucks. On the agriculture front, word came last week that after several years of low prices and negative profit margins, about 80 dairy farms have closed in Iowa so far this year. Iowa is the nation's 10th largest milk producer. Also last week, word that Warren County officials were scaling back the size of the county's future courthouse and holding back more than $1 million that had been promised for the law enforcement center. Supervisors voted to move forward with a 73,000-square-foot building with the possibility of a 7,000-square-foot addition. Meanwhile, there was word last week that Walmart hopes to turn the parking lot of its Windsor Heights store into a mixed-use development with restaurants, bars, and entertainment venues. the existing Walmart store and Sam's Club outlet would remain. And word late last week that the city of Des Moines will not close its remaining wading pools. An earlier plan had suggested closing 8 wading pools in order to save between $20,000 and $30,000. But that plan generated a considerable amount of negative reaction. And as always on the first weekend in November, college football made big news around Iowa. Iowa State University defeated Kansas 27-3. The University of Iowa lost to Purdue 38-36. And the University of Northern Iowa defeated Illinois State 26-16. And that is your summary of a very busy week of news from around the state last week. I'm Dennis Hart, reminding you that I'll be right back here on Friday with a look at election returns and this week's other news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. In the meantime, have a great week.
Africa.
Solomoni,
io Solomoni,
Solimatan,
io Solomoni,
Solomoni,
io Solomoni,
Solimatan,
io Solomoni,
vaye
isocha non conto resi,
Boamuna
wa mapune Africa.
Aye isocha,
isocha non conto resi,
Boamuna
wa mapune Africa.
Solomoni,
io Solomoni,
Solimatan,
io Solomoni,
Solomoni,
io Solomoni,
Solimatan.
Isocha non conto resi,
Boamuna,
Boamuna, Africa.
Aye isocha,
isocha non conto resi,
Boamuna,
Boamuna, Africa.
Usolomoni,
io
Usolomoni,
Usolomoni,
Solimatan,
io
Usolomoni, Usolomoni. Solomon,
Solomon, Solomon,
Solomon,
Solomon,
Solomon,
Solomon,
Solomon,
Solomon,
Solomon,
Solomon, Africa.
Solomoni,
io Solomoni,
Solimatan,
io Solomoni,
Solomoni,
io Solomoni,
Solimatan,
io
Vaye isocha,
isocha non conto resi,
Boamuna
wa mapune Africa.
Vaye isocha,
isocha non conto resi,
Boamuna
wa mapune Africa.
Solomoni,
io Solomoni,
Solimatan,
io
Solomoni,
io Solomoni,
Solimatan,
io Solomoni. soja no mkoto esi
owa mulawa
owa
mulawa owa mulawa
Africa
aye soja
soja no mkoto esi
owa mulawa
owa mulawa
owa mulawa
Africa
usalomoni
iyo
usalomoni
solima
tang
iyo
beso
Usalomoni,
Iyo
Usalomoni,
Solimahan,
Iyo
Solimahan,
Usalomoni,
Aye Isocha,
Isocha no mkoto esi,
Owa mulawa,
Owa mulawa,
Owa mulawa,
Africa,
Aye Isocha,
Isocha
no mkoto
esi,
Owa
That was a song from South Africa. It honors Solomon Malangu, who fought against apartheid. When he was just a teenager, he was part of the Soweto Uprising that protested unequal education for blacks in South Africa. He subsequently joined the African National Congress militant wing and trained in Angola before returning to South Africa to fight the white regime. He was convicted of murder and hanged in 1979 at 23 years old. He is remembered as someone who sacrificed greatly for democracy in South Africa. Cheryl Binzen is with us now. Cheryl is with a group called Inclusive Aims. Thanks for being here.
Oh, it's great, Gail. Thanks for having us.
And we're going to talk about a couple of different things. We're going to talk about your organization or your group, Inclusive Aims, in a bit. But let's start off by having you tell us about the event that you have coming up this weekend.
Yes, we're really excited about this event. It's called Race, the Power of an Illusion. It's this Saturday, November 10th. It's from 9 in the morning till about 3:45 in the afternoon, and it's at the Ames Public Library. This is an event, a learning experience that has been pulled together quite some time ago by the Department of Human Services. So DHS has been doing this learning exchange, this learning experience throughout the state of Iowa. So we're really pleased that they're coming to Ames this Saturday, November 10th.
And it's at the library.
It is at the library in the auditorium. And registration is today. Today's the last day to get registered for this event. Yeah.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the title. Race, the Power of Illusion, I know, is the title of a film that was put out by PBS, I believe, a number of years ago.
Yes, that's correct. And the day's experience on Saturday does include that segment from PBS. It's a day of learning, listening, and courageous conversations, as we've promoted it, about child welfare. So that segment from PBS is a part of that day.
It's an interesting title. Also, you use the phrase free learning exchange.
Yes, it is. It's going to be, again, a lot of conversation there. The first part of the day is sort of a data download so that there's some statistical, factual information on which this is based. And then we share the video that you just talked about from PBS. And then the afternoon is sharing experiences, talking about what people have experienced. And our hope, again, for the day is that people come away from this eye-opening day with an idea for how we can help ensure equitable treatment for children of color in Iowa's child welfare system. And this is a good place for me to mention that CEUs are available. So there's 6 CEUs available for social workers and 5 for foster parent credit hours.
And those are kind of like professional development kinds of credits that people can receive.
Exactly, exactly. And please, everyone is welcome. You don't need to be looking for CEUs, just looking for the opportunity to understand a little bit more about how race is an illusion. It's there is power in that illusion because we believe it. We buy into it. And this helps to sort of take away the veil of that illusion.
And understand the consequences of when that's perpetuated.
Exactly. And in this case, it's really focused on children, and that's makes it super important in my mind.
And it sounds like the day will be interactive, so people can come and expect to be in conversation and learning from each other and sharing with each other, not just being talked too.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. In fact, this is maybe a good time to mention that Wayne Clinton of our Human Resources Commission, who's one of the sponsors of this, the Library Inclusive Aims, DHS, of course, and then the Human Relations Commission, Wayne took a day of his time to attend this particular training that was being presented in Adele and came back with high grades for it, if you will. He felt it was really a day that was worth taking the time for. So we appreciate him sort of being our preview person for mm-hmm. this experience.
And how did the decision come about to get involved in trying to bring this to Ames?
Well, Inclusive Ames has been offering different kinds of learning experiences, if you will. We've had about five of them now. I think this will be our sixth. And the intent is, if I'm just going to quick read our vision, because I think that'll explain it. We came up with this vision, which is Ames will continue to grow as a community whose citizens recognize and respect different perspectives, backgrounds, and lifestyles. And so the way we're trying to have that vision come into being is we are a great community. We've got a lot of interchange going on, and we wanted to continue that through learning experiences. The library's been fabulous as a place to hold these because it's our library. People love coming there. It's an easy place to get to and an easy place to participate. And then we also have a great resource with ISU and ISU Extension. Many of our facilitators have been from that community, both with the ideas that they brought to us in terms of topics that would be of interest along these lines, and also the facilitators. So that's a little background about that.
And so this came to your attention, and you just thought it would be a fit for Ames and a fit for what your group is trying to do.
Right. So back in November of 2016, a group here in Ames called APA, Ames Progressive Alliance, held a community event at the library, and it was literally overflowing. And it said to us that there is an interest in this community to come together across different perspectives. And isn't it wonderful that we don't all think the same thing? And it's going to continue to be wonderful when we can hear what other people have to say and not take it personally, but really open our minds. So then APA also had an event called Implicit Bias, which was also very, very well attended. The auditorium was literally packed, but there was standing room. It was wonderful. And so what that said to a small group of us is there's a hunger, there's an interest in our community for people to understand why we think what we think, why we believe what we believe, and decide, does that still fit for us in today's environment? And if it does, great. And if it doesn't, how can we understand another person's point of view? Not to change it, but just to understand so that we can truly build community based on a wide variety of ideas and topics.
Yes, I remember that event in November of 2016 very well. And as I think you know, another group that emerged from that day is a group called ASAT, the Ames Youth and Schools Action Team, which I'm very involved with. And I acknowledge that was a very momentous event that happened that fall evening, because a lot has come out of it. A lot of good work has been done. The Ames Youth and School Action Team has been very involved in trying to call attention to the racial and ethnic disparities that exist in the Ames schools, and that's been important work that the people who've gotten involved in that really, really believe in. So it kind of parallels in a more specific way the work that your group is doing.
Yes. Yeah, it does. And, you know, we have sort of gone off on our own, if you will. We're a separate mm-hmm. organization now. And our focus, again, is primarily to have events that people can attend at the library, our wonderful library, and just talk and experience and learn about how to be in community, especially in terms of dialogue.
And what were some of the other events that Inclusive Ames has held?
Well, the first one that we did was called Toward Building Community, First Understanding Ourselves, and that was facilitated by Ross Wilburn, who's from ISU Extension. And then we shared the next one, which is Ouch, That Stereotype Hurts, mm-hmm. and it's kind of a bystander training, although I have a friend that likes to call bystander training upstander.
Upstander, right.
Because we're standing up for our values, for what we believe in. And then then this fall, we had cross-cultural communications, navigating difficult communications. And the last one in October was compassionate communication, how to create a solid foundation for interpersonal dialogue. So you can see the theme, right? It's mm-hmm. all about how we can express ourselves in a way that opens the conversation, not shuts it down.
And have you gotten any, has there been any resistance or pushback on any of these?
Well, there hasn't. And we have had evaluation forms at the end of the sessions, and we've gotten very positive feedback from the people who attended. And so our first event toward building community was really sort of a toe in the water to see how it would be received. And it was received really well. We had a really nice attendance. I think there was 35, 40 people there, which we felt was a good number and very positive feedback. So that we haven't gotten anybody saying, don't be doing that kind of stuff anymore. Again, I'm just going to put in another plug for the library. They're very open to having programs that are a wide variety, a great diversity. And so they've allowed us to come in and use the facilities there.
We use the library facilities for our biweekly meetings of the steering committee for the Ames Youth and School Action Team. The steering committee meets before every school board meeting because one of the things we've been doing is being a presence at the school board meetings and just trying to bring people's attention to the racial and ethnic disparities, which exist in a number of different areas. They exist in achievement, they exist in discipline, and also in what we call tracking. Who gets access to advanced courses and opportunities in the schools. So those are things that we've been trying to bring to people's attention. And we're happy to have a superintendent who seems to be paying a great deal of attention to these concerns that have been expressed by the community. And the new superintendent really wants to hear from the students of color and the families of students of color about their experiences. And so it kind of speaks to what you were talking about in terms of the need to communicate and hear other perspectives. And the new leadership in the school district really seems to be interested in doing that, recognizing that you can't really understand the experiences of students of color unless you ask students of color about their experiences and learn from them. And that seems to be happening now, whereas it wasn't really happening in the past.
Yeah, I've been following the work of your group ever since it came together, Gail, and it's really appreciated. You guys are doing great stuff for the students in our school. You know, I'm going to take a little sidebar here because it occurs to me that I did talk about the date, November 10th, and that it's at the library, but I don't, and that this is the last day to register. And the reason we're requiring registration, of course, is we have materials that would need to be provided and lunch as well as provided. So we need a head count. So grab your pens and pencils. Mm-hmm. This is how a person can register today. Go to the Ames Public Library website, which is .org, and then on the left side of the screen, you can click on Events and Classes, then click on the Calendar of Library Events, which will be the first option listed. Then go to November 10th on that calendar, which is the date of the event, and you'll see Race, the Power of an Illusion. You click on that and the registration page will open up. So it's very straightforward, and we look forward again. Everyone is welcome as long as you're registered, so we have a space for you. Thank you.
So the library website, and then it's a couple of steps in the process, but they should be able to navigate it.
Yes, yes. We have had plenty of people register, so I'm pretty sure it's easy enough to do. I just wanted to be really clear about mm-hmm. about the steps so that people realize it's just a step-down kind of thing, which I think most of us are familiar with our websites.
And there is no day of registration because you need the headcount in advance to provide materials and lunch.
We do need the headcount in advance, yes. Yeah.
Okay. And is it the kind of thing that people really should come for the whole day? They shouldn't just come for part of it to get the most out of it?
Yes, we specifically asked that of DHS, the Department of Human Services, and they said that it's just exactly what you said, Gail, that people aren't going to be able to get much out of it if you just get pieces. So it is an all-day event. Our registration starts promptly at 9 when the library opens, and there'll be a break for lunch, of course, a couple of breaks during the day, morning and afternoon, and then the expected wrap-up time is around 3:45.
Well, it sounds like it's a wonderful opportunity for people here in Ames, and thank you for bringing it to Ames, doing the work that you do, and also for being here this morning to tell us about it.
Well, thank you, Gail.
I've been talking with Cheryl Binzen, who is part of a community group called Inclusive Ames. NextGen America is an organization that was founded by Tom Steyers. He is a business leader and philanthropist who works to ensure that every family shares the benefits of economic opportunity, education, and a healthy climate. Starting in 2013, NextGen Climate worked to fight climate change by advancing the transition to a clean energy economy. This year, NextGen America is registering, motivating, and hopefully turning out more than 250,000 young people to vote. Across 11 states, they're working to ensure that young voters help progressives flip Congress, win governor's races, and take back state legislatures. And they are working here in Iowa as well, particularly on issues such as immigrant rights, affordable health care, prosperity, and equality. KHOI reporter Joy Beadleston went to Iowa State University campus, where the Next Gen Iowa's team has been working hard to get out the vote. They're working to get people registered and prepared to vote tomorrow. Joy interviewed them about the issues that are important to them and what is motivating them to do this work across Iowa.
My name is Haley Hager. I'm the state youth director here in Iowa for Next Gen America.
And what are you doing at Iowa State campus?
We're raising awareness and doing one big final push to go out and exercise their right to vote. We have registered over 14,000 people here in Iowa, and most of that has been on the ground, volunteer organizing. And we are really, really excited about this year's elections because there's a lot at stake. And we know that young people are the biggest voting block here in Iowa, and we are going to have a huge impact on the outcomes this year. People are already energized by it, so it's like really fun to be out here. We had 59 staff members on the ground having face-to-face conversations with students every single day, giving them information about what to bring, like what days they can go vote. That way they are as informed as possible. Because a lot of students don't know that they can vote early. They think that they can only vote on election day.
Do you have other methods to inform the students?
We also do a digital program, a mail program. We have ads running on pretty much every social media platform that you can imagine. We're also meeting young people where they're at, and that's on their screens. I'm totally guilty of it myself.
What is driving students to be out here and put themselves in the public and say, I support Next Gen?
Yeah. There's a lot of issues on the ballot. For example, like cost of college has gone up here in Iowa. Healthcare is something that's also super important to young people, making sure that it's affordable.
What is the most important issue for you personally?
I would say healthcare. It has gotten out of control how expensive it is. And for me personally, I really experienced that when I was 20 years old in college. There was one night where I went to the pharmacy on campus to go pick medication up, and it was $80. For me, that was a huge awakening because I either had to decide, do I buy my medicine or do I buy my groceries? Those are things that young people who are going to college, who are working minimum wage jobs, should not be thinking about. They should be focused on their studies and a better life for themselves and not so worried about medicine or food. And I know lots of families here in Iowa are struggling with that as well. That's what really motivates me, like not only to do this work, but also to do this on college campuses, because I know I was not alone in that and I'm still not alone in that experience, and raising awareness that who we vote for directly impacts that.
Where will you be next?
We're going to go out canvassing all weekend to doors of young people and let them know that, like, hey, election day's coming up. Here's your polling site, and let them know about that. And we're doing that across Iowa.
And then can you give your website?
Yeah, if you want to go to nextgenamerica.org, and then also keep up with us on Facebook. We update it very regularly and very, very often.
Well, thank you.
Of course. My name's Mark Ely.
What is important to you with working with NextGen?
Mm-hmm. One of the things that's really important for me is that we really get to talk to students in their daily lives. We get to be on campus with them every single day and have those important conversations. tuition increases, you know, women's reproductive rights. These are things that students really do care about, but they don't always have the time or know the resources to learn about how to make an impact with it. So if we can be here and tell them that voting is one of your best resources, it's a really great way that we can see a change in students heading to the polls. You know, public school is supposed to be a viable option for Americans. It's supposed to be an obtainable version of higher education, and the cuts we keep seeing is making it that even our public schools are not affordable for the average student. I just graduated in May, and my whole time at college here, I worked 2 paid jobs while being a full-time student, and this is becoming like the average for all students. It's becoming so, so common. So if we can't invest in our higher ed, we can't expect to keep Iowa students here. We can't expect to keep Iowans here when they graduate. It's just so hard, and it's so horrible for Iowa students to not even be able to afford public school, and it really puts us at a disadvantage to the rest of the nation. So it's something that really needs to be sorted out.
What would you say about women and voting?
The fact that we have so many women running this season is amazing. Candidates like Deirdre DeGier are showing us that we want people who represent us. We want women in the state house. We want women working for us and representing us. And that is how we will see change that is positive for women and that will actually impact them in a great way. This is a really important election for women for multiple reasons. One of the primary ones that I think as a woman is the abortion ban that was passed by Governor Kim Reynolds this past season is the most restrictive that we've seen. And it's absolutely disenfranchising to women of color, to low-income women. So many women depend on reproductive rights that she is now trying to take away from them. So that's a really big deal, especially, you know, young college students also really depend on these resources. Is so, so important, and it's something that's taken away when groups like Planned Parenthood and all these amazing groups that are helping women with their reproductive rights are no longer funded and have no access. We have a lot of women on campus, young women who maybe through their high school and middle school years weren't given great access to their reproductive education that they need to be well educated on matters of their own reproductive health. And having groups like that in the community that are willing to be visible and have conversations with women about their own rights, things that they might not even be aware of, because if women aren't aware of their rights, if they're not aware of the issues and that, you know, you need to get breast cancer screenings, these are all things that aren't very openly spoken about. And if these groups aren't around and present to speak about them, then it goes unnoticed. And that's bad for women. It's disenfranchising to us, and it's horrible for our health. And we don't have any viable, great resources for preschool care, for any sort of, you know, nursery care for moms. I mean, and this is disenfranchising to our children, but it's also, again, very disenfranchising to women, because who are the people that have to stay home with their kids when they don't have viable options and affordable options for daycare? Yeah, this is a super important race for all young people, specifically for women. I'm so excited to see the upticks of women who will be voting. We've been here. We've all been here through the Trump presidency, through the Reynolds governorship. We have been here. We are watching. We are listening. And we will be at the ballots. Or we will be at the polls. We will be early voting. And we will definitely show up on November 6th.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to Joy Beadleston for that report and for her efforts to bring us stories about people actively working for change. And we've been joined now in the studio by Bronwyn Beattie Hansen, a member of Ames City Council, who comes in once a month to talk with us. Thanks for being here.
Oh, yeah, thank you.
One of the things we wanted to talk about today was what the city is doing locally to address climate change. With the recent report from the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, it's kind of placed new urgency on taking action to combat it. And the city of Ames has been working on a long-range plan called the Comprehensive Plan. And so that's how the discussion, the recent discussion of climate change has come up at council?
Yep, exactly. We're undertaking an update of what was our land use policy plan. And the new one will be more comprehensive than just land use, so we're calling it a comprehensive plan instead. And we just hired our consultant for that, and we did have some citizen input at that meeting about climate and how we could look at this comprehensive plan, you know, through a lens of climate change, or what we can do to, address climate change through this plan. And that was an interesting discussion. I think there are some things a plan like this can do to address climate change, since it deals with land use. You know, you want to have the most efficient use of your land, increase density in your core, reduce, you know, transportation needs and things like that for an overall, like, long view of climate as a city is developing. But I think there's a lot, too, that we can't address through the comprehensive plan that deals with climate change. I guess what I'm looking forward to pursuing, just, I mean, and we have to, I have to get the rest of council behind it yet, too. I'm not sure we'll be setting priorities in January again, but I think climate action plan as a separate plan document would be worth pursuing, because that could cover a number of topics that this comprehensive plan probably won't touch on.
So RDG, the planning and design company, is said that they will address some aspects of climate change response in the plan that they are developing. But you're saying you think that there's not space in there or the suitable venue for them to do that fully.
Right. I would say just it's more about what's a suitable venue. I mean, the comprehensive plan will deal with land use, and it will tie in some transportation system issues that could relate to climate. But it doesn't really touch on, say something like our power grid, or, you know, our demand side management programs, or any of the things we do on a, you know, to get people to cut down on electricity use, say, mm-hmm. or, you know, that sort of thing. It doesn't have a place in the comprehensive plan for that, as far as I'm aware. It's mostly about land use and then tying in some of our other, like I said, transportation plans. But I think a specific climate action plan could address some of the more specific areas from each department in the city where climate can be addressed.
Mm-hmm. Kind of overarching.
Yeah, exactly. So that's something I hope that council is interested in pursuing in this upcoming year.
So that's something that would have to be brought to council, a proposal to have such a thing.
Yeah, it would be a fairly in-depth, you know, discussion. So that we'd have to set that amongst our goals and sort of prioritize that along with the other projects we're undertaking lately.
Recently, City Council member David Martin made a motion to place climate change on an agenda for a future council meeting, and that motion was passed. Do you know when that will be, or has that been decided yet? Or?
Good question. I don't know exactly when it'll be.
Okay.
It'll be coming up here, you know, I would say yet this year, I would think that we would have that. And that discussion will be how climate change relates to this comprehensive plan.
Okay.
And maybe how it doesn't, and how we need to address it in other ways, too.
Uh-huh. So maybe a plan for a climate action document or effort in and of itself would come out of that.
Yeah, or at least the hope to set that as a council priority in January when we do our goal setting.
So anything else on that comprehensive plan that you would want to tell people about in relation to this topic?
Well, I would say the public input on this document is going to be vital. Council can set our goals and what we hope to see the city do over the next 20 years. But, you know, if we want citizen input on that in a big way, so that we aren't making decisions in the dark. So as people see opportunities to give input on that comprehensive plan, I would really recommend doing so, whether it's an online survey or maybe an open house that they do, or, you know, any sort of meetings. Or I just definitely feel free to give us your input on that comprehensive plan, because it is one of the bigger planning documents the city has. And the more citizen input I think we get, the better.
And do you know the time frame for that? Like, will it be over the next 6 months, or that people can be looking for those opportunities?
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So that'll be in the next, over the course of the next half year or so.
Okay.
Yep. And then we'll start to move into designing the plan itself, you know, once we've gathered input. So,
okay. So let's talk about some specific initiatives that the city is already working on that are intended to lessen our impact on climate change. I know we have the Smart Solar Initiative and some other things going on. Can you give us some updates on those?
Good question. We're waiting on an update on the community solar project. We had been waiting to get a certain number of committed shares sold on that. But from what I understand, I think we hope to move forward with that soon.
The actual building?
Well, it would be starting the process. we haven't seen that come in front of us at council, but I think it should be coming soon to get moving on that. A big part of climate is the aggregation of all of our personal uses of energy. So whether it's electricity in your home or whether it's gasoline in your car. I mean, there are many number of ways that individuals use energy too. And I'm curious how we as a city can affect those, you know, mm-hmm. because those are big contributors when you take them together. So even something like our pursuit of a complete streets model where we are prioritizing, you know, other methods of transportation equal to the automobile, you know, public transportation or walking or biking. I think those things, that's moving in a direction of more sustainability over time. So even pursuit of stuff like that, I think, is helpful. We have our demand-side management programs. That's what we call it, where the city tries to control how much, you know, we as the public are using so that we don't have to produce more at peak times. So the power plants say, you know, if people get those devices in their homes that turn their ACs off just for tiny bits of time, you know, throughout the peak times of day, then our power plant doesn't have to expand as soon as it might otherwise have to. And so those demand-side management programs are really useful too, actually. And what else have we been? I'm trying to think of other projects we've been working on. I mean, there are other sustainability projects, you know, but I don't know that it's carbon reduction necessarily. Mm-hmm. So we saw an exciting new project coming in on the South 5th Street expansion that's like a wetland sort of water filtration system. That's sustainability, but I don't know that it relates to carbon, you know, mm-hmm. carbon control. So it's sort of a different story, I guess.
And that's about runoff prevention into streams.
Yep, exactly. This is sort of a sidebar, but I'm recently on the Squaw Creek Watershed mm-hmm. Board, mm-hmm. and I just went to my first meeting of that, and that was really fascinating. It's interesting to see the shape that our waterways are in, and what we can do to help that through runoff control, and then also incentivizing things like buffer strips and things like that.
And since it's fall and there's a lot of leaves around to deal with, I've always been curious why things are handled the way they are in Ames, why the city doesn't pick up leaves in some way.
Yeah.
And yeah, just the whole leaf thing, that why there's only a few days we can dispose of our yard waste. And
yep, that's a good question. So I got a little history on this
okay.
so that I'd be prepared. And so it sounds like in the early 90s, you could no longer landfill leaves. So, you know, it used to be an option apparently. And then that got prohibited. And the city did collect for a time. The residents could schedule like a leaf vacuum truck to come mm-hmm. by. But that was discontinued in 2003 when the private leaf drop-off site was opened. And so you'll notice, I mean, in a lot of ways, if there is a private service offering a service, like the city won't duplicate that. So a good example would be garbage waste is the same too. The city doesn't provide that as a municipal service because there are private haulers that do it. So with the availability of the private leaf drop-off site, the city discontinued the public service of that.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of how many days there are, that's something that we negotiate with that service provider. So Chamness Technologies in this case is where people drop that off.
So the city pays them a certain amount to take leaves four times a year or in the fall
yep.
and once in the spring.
Exactly, yep. Four in the fall, once in the spring. And we do our residential satisfaction survey every year. And the question was asked maybe 2 or 3 years ago if people wanted more days and if they'd be willing to pay for more days, or, you know, if the city should pay for that. And there was interest, but not in the paying part, mm-hmm. which is always that's always the rub, you know, to provide more services. Like if we were to pick up leaves, for example, it takes, you know, money either from fees of collecting to do that, or it takes money from taxes to do that. And it's sometimes hard to balance that. Like people would love more days or be able to do it more, but there's a cost to that. So, and folks already think the property taxes are up there in Ames. So, but there are, I did discover there are a few free places you can take your leaves. that'll take them. So the Ames High School Garden, they will accept leaves either in bags or not. They prefer them in bags, but they'll take them not. And that's just up by off of 20th Street, kind of by the high school there. So they'll take them for free. And then also Mustard Seed Farm would love to have leaves for mulching. And so they will actually come pick them up, it looks like. So you can call or text them to have them arrange a leaf pickup too. So there's a couple options mm-hmm. there of people who are using them for community projects or farming.
Okay, that's good to know. And what about food waste? That's the other thing that we've been hearing. They don't want our pumpkins and so on in the trash because those shouldn't be put through the incinerator to burn.
Yes.
The whole issue of food waste, what should we do with it?
Good question. I think this is one that we'll be looking at more, or at least I'm interested in looking into it more as a city, because you're right, we don't want it in the power plant. I suppose what the city would prefer is folks who are able to compost that stuff themselves. Currently, there isn't a service provider for residential compost pickup in the area. So unfortunately, we're stuck either having to do it ourselves or maybe at some point we could consider like a city drop-off site. I don't know. That's just sort of brainstorming. They do have a new rebate in place for a composter at the city. So if you get one of those composting barrel thingies, you can get a rebate for that, which is an incentive to have people do more food waste composting. And then it is a service you can purchase if you're a business. So at Wheatsfield, where I work, for example, we compost through a private company. But no residential service is available mm-hmm. from them at this mm-hmm. time anyway. Maybe in the future, which would be exciting.
Mm-hmm. And are there other cities in Iowa who do have citywide composting? Or?
Well, from what I understand, Iowa City does. I haven't looked into their system on how they handle that. If they have, maybe they have a provider in the area who can, or they as a city. I'd have to look into that. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, it's something I think that we should look at soon, because I think it would definitely help out the quality of the power plant material that we're getting to have food and leaf waste out of there. So,
mm-hmm. Okay. Any last things you would like to let the citizens know about?
Oh, again, I would just say watch out for that comprehensive plan. Any input opportunities on that? Make sure you're giving us those. And then it's almost the second Tuesday first Tuesday after the first Monday, I guess, in November. So make sure that you go vote if you haven't already. It's very important. So thank you very much for having me.
So even though the no city council elections
no
this
city
time,
council
they
elections.
Should still get out and vote.
They're all important. Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
All right. Thanks very much for coming in, Bronwyn.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Bronwyn Beattie Hansen from Ames City Council. And this is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. And you can listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk is engineered by Cynthia McClure, and our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. KHOI's fall membership drive will be starting on Wednesday, but you can beat the crowds and donate or become a member now. Just do it online. Go to the website, khoifm.org, and look for the donate button, or you can call 515-292-2878, or even better, stop by the station and meet some of the amazing KHOI volunteers in person. And please remember to vote tomorrow. Polls are open 7 a.m. to 9 p.m., and you must go to your assigned precinct. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.